The Bills pull it out in Jacksonville. What a game. On to the second round in the Broncos this Saturday. Talk about that matchup and yesterday's thriller with Eric Wood, who joins us now on the Western Hotline, as it is Football Monday around here. Eric, have you caught your breath yet since last night, since yesterday?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that was a barn burner. That was nerve-wracking. You know, just one of those things where going back and forth in the fourth quarter, you just don't want the season to end yet. And so, obviously, came out in the Bills' favor, but that was a heck of a football game.
How long did it take you to learn not to be yelling like a fan when the game is coming right down to the end? I only ask because, you know, Mike and I watched years and years worth of these games in the press box where there's no, you know, there's no cheering, there's really no anything, as it should be. And I watch the games at home, game days. I work from home on post game, and I'm pretty quiet the whole game. My son is newer at all this, and he's working here now on the morning show, and he'll you know, say stuff. I'm mostly silent, but when it gets to that, like when they're pushing him in on the 11-yard tush push, I'm screaming, "No! Don't score! Don't score!" How do you handle that? How hard was that for you to adjust to?
That's a great question. You know, I'll say just being respectful of the play-by-play guy and knowing how often a really big call is going to be used throughout a week on national TV shows and all the rest. Like, I'm just trying not to step on their toes, not right. to ruin it. The one time I spoke over the play-by-play guy, and I heard about it plenty, was the Dolphins ran an onside kick. This is, I don't know, probably 5 years ago, and Micah Hyde returned it for a touchdown. Mm-hmm. And I was saying, get down, the game's over. Like, there's no – and not that they were going to come back from a two-score deal. It's just that's further risk of injury. You got to play more plays. The game's going to be over. Heck, I'm ready to go drink a beer in the parking lot after the game.
Yep.
And so I was saying, go down, and people let me have it. And so it didn't take that long to adjust to, though. But there's not – I mean, like anybody – I mean – we don't do it often, but the Bills score to take the lead yesterday. It was after the interception. There's high fives around in the radio booth. We had some fun with that.
Yeah.
I know you.
Thanks for taking the question.
I know you came up listening to the Bengals, though, and that guy, that's every play.
I was going to say, and also I've always heard the critique of Dave Lapham my whole life, talking over Dan Hoard,
right.
and, you know, screaming. And there's some people that like that. There's some people that, you know, appreciate that. I would say the majority
don't
appreciate that. They know that me and Chris want the Bills to win, and we want them to win bad. And we really enjoy our job and the team we cover, and we're grateful to do it. But we want to do it in a way that we don't interrupt someone trying to get a clear picture of what's going on, that's, you know, driving a truck right. for a living on a Sunday. Like, we want to be really respectful of those guys and gals who need us to paint the picture.
So that play, the long tush push, the 11-yarder that originally was ruled a touchdown, in your head, are you going, no, like, what is that like? What is that moment like in the booth?
Well, at first, yeah, you're just kind of like, wow, so they're completely overpowering them. Look at this. And then I'm thinking to myself, man, I hope this is overturned and we're down at the half-yard line. As they're reviewing it, we're kind of going through the points of whether you try and drain some clock in this situation to try and, you know, Jacksonville, Liam Cohen, if we're just short of the goal line, he's going to have to use his final timeout, which is great. Then do you run the risk of potentially mishandling a snap, an offsides on a QB sneak, getting stuffed multiple times? Ultimately, Sean McDermott, I guess it's right because it worked out. But to me, I think that can go either way. Just, I mean, we would be kicking ourselves, obviously.
Yeah.
Had, you know, someone flinches on the goal line on the road where you can't hear, or you can barely hear the quarterback's cadence as it is, and someone flinches, and now you're at the 5.5-yard line, and now you look like a fool.
Real quick, I just want to squeeze in here. Plus that play, Eric, this year, it hasn't happened to the Bills, but it happened to the Eagles a couple times. And like every Monday, I would see, like, oh, they called a false start on the guard this time, but they didn't that other time. And it just feels kind of arbitrary how those flags have been thrown. And I would understand not wanting to take that chance and lose 5 yards there. Now it's second and goal at the six. And like, yo, it's a whole different thing.
Right, and that play's hard to police. When the guys are lined up that close to the line of scrimmage and really crossing over the plane of the ball, it's hard. It's hard on the officials to see any movement in there, and if they see anything, they're going to call it. And then on the other side of it, how those line judges, the side judges, they're in a tough spot. It's basically a scrum, and you're guessing. You need that SkyCam footage, and basically, that's when you need that video replay assist because, I mean, they can guess where the ball's at and all that mess, but how do they know? And at what point do you stop the forward progress? And I think that's why a lot of teams wanted it banned and everyone's throwing it in our faces today because Sean McDermott was adamant that he voted against the tush push, but it's one of those things where if it's legal and we got Josh Allen, why – until you do.
With Eric Wood, you're breaking up a little bit there, Eric. Mike Shope and the Bulldog here, Football Monday on WGR. If we still have him, want to ask about just Allen. We don't have Eric. I don't need to say all this twice. Mike, you don't need to say all this twice. But what is left to say about Allen and just these performances? I think you had to have that game. But you got it, and now you got to do it again, and then maybe again. Like that, it's just
right.
It's a very challenging ask here, but it's whatever. Like if they lose this game, like the caller pointed out earlier, Lawrence might have had Washington to get the Bills right back in the last minute. If he does that, what are we doing today? We're just losing our minds, Eric. I don't know if anything is left to say about Allen, but what you've got yesterday and this year is just the physical toll. And, you know, it's got to account for something, but he plays through it. Now you have a few different parts of his body that might be, you know, less than 100%.
Yeah, for sure. And it's unfortunate. And, you know, some of it's self-inflicted on his end. Some of it's just kind of unfortunate scenarios where, you know, he just randomly gets his leg bent back yesterday and all that. It sure seemed like the Jaguars were headhunting pretty good, and Joshua Hines-Allen yesterday in the post game was bragging about how they sent him to the injury tent twice, but then he still made the plays down the stretch. So, I mean, in the day and age of bounty gate and all that, it's probably not something I would say at a press conference. But that being said, you know, Josh is a warrior, and, you know, not that he ever needs to do anything to earn the respect of his teammates, but he continuously shows that if he's able to be out there, he will. And he makes himself available each and every week. So there's no doubt in my mind that he'll be out there in uniform on Saturday, but a quick turnaround, the travel and all that, you know, it's one of those deals where I'm sure he's hurting today, everything from the finger to his knee, to his foot that he already came into the game with. And so, he took a pretty good beating yesterday, but and not a lot of it was in the pocket per se. It wasn't like the offensive line against Houston got owned. It was just kind of circumstantial throughout the game and some of the stuff he did on the move. But I mean, Josh's performance yesterday was excellent. I thought he played like a quarterback with a lot of playoff experience early on. Let's see how the game unfolds. I'll take what the defense gives me. I'm not going to make mistakes with the ball. Starts the game, you know, like 9 for 11 or something, you know, just very efficient early on, taking what the defense gives them. And then it's the game dictated that some plays need to be made down the field. Okay, now here comes Superman. Here he comes, ready to go take this game over. And, I mean, when the Bills were down, I'm sure you guys saw this too, but when the Bills were losing yesterday, he was 14 for 16. He had 133 quarterback rating, 2 touchdowns. I mean, he's just – When he goes, and we've seen it continuously this year, when you need him to kind of step out and make plays down the field, He shows he still got it.
Yeah, and none bigger than the 36-yarder to Cooks that set up, ultimately, that long tush-push play. There were a couple of plays in between, but still, it's that same sequence. And, Eric, that throw is... It's incredible athleticism and toughness to stand in there in the face of that blitzer and get that ball where it ended up getting to without using his lower body really at all. He couldn't step into it. And there's also the manipulating of the defenders that I think happened on that play. So it's like both things. It's wondrously athletic and courageous, maybe even, to stand in there to take that shot. I mean, quarterbacks have to face that. It's one of the parts of the job. But it was also... heady, smart, you know, whatever adjective you want to put on it, to sort of manipulate that outside defender to jump that out route and leave so much green for Cooks.
Yeah, and that kind of just sums up basically where Josh Allen's game's at right now, where, you know, on each and every week he shows off how athletic he still is, the arm strength, the toughness, and the intelligence. And it's just impressive, the career trajectory that he's had. And yeah, that play was outstanding. And it was kind of a cat and mouse game where the Bills don't even have a running back on the field, which they did some yesterday without Ty Johnson being available. So they don't even have a running back on the field. They're in an empty set. They motion Shakir into the backfield on one side. And I mean, Josh would never reveal this because it would give up too much of the strategy, but it's almost like he's begging you to blitz that guy off the left, so that you only have so many guys so that he can make that hole shot. And I'm not sure if that's exactly what he was thinking, but he brings Shakir intentionally to the right side to say, okay, protect me over here because I want that guy to come, or I'm going to attack this side of the field. And it was executed perfectly. It was outstanding. And when I saw it unfold live in real time, just the demeanor in which he threw it, I almost thought, oh, he's going to throw it over Cook's head safely just to – live another play.
Right.
And instead, it's just a perfect hole shot in the zone defense.
Well, he did it all without, again, just obvious go-to options among pass catchers. Gabe Davis was a guy. He loses Davis in this game. And you've got a big game from Shakir. Kincaid for three, you know, sort of the usual stuff. Brandon Cooks, like we're talking about. And I don't know, Eric, like now they've got to patch it together again. This week, you mentioned Bountygate, actually. Here's Sean Payton and the Broncos this week. The thing here, we know, we talk about it all year, that number one seed, it's about as tough as it gets here, Eric, I would say, for the Bills on the road. A day less to prepare and to heal, plus the travel out there and the altitude there against a Denver not only didn't play this week, but they didn't need the game in week 18. So it's like a Kansas City situation there. This one is going to be hard.
It will be. Yeah, they're definitely rewarding these one seeds by giving them the Sunday teams on Saturday. And, yeah, it's going to be a difficult task, you know, to go out there. Playing in the elevation is real. It can be difficult. For me, the biggest thing was it almost is just like cotton mouth, where you're halfway through a drive and you feel like your mouthpiece is just sticking to your teeth because the air is so dry and thin. But – I never noticed that I was particularly extra winded. I just felt like at times, like just could hardly like
you wake up at 3 in the morning, like what's going on? My lips going to pull apart if I open my mouth right now. Yeah. Like that kind of dry. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Like where a guy, you know, they're well back in the day when they'd bring the chains out, but any type of stoppage like that, I'm like waving over to a trainer just to throw me a water bottle. But, yeah, it'll be a tough test, and this Denver team's impressive. You know, offensively, they've had some ups and downs. Without J.K. Dobbins, their run game's not really there. Bo Nix can make some improvisational throws that are impressive, and then at times he looks like he's equipped to operate from the pocket. And then defensively, they're really impressive. I watched them, I don't know, maybe about a month ago against the Commanders and thought, gosh, they're going to lose this game in overtime to the Commanders, and they squeaked that one out. You mentioned Kansas City earlier, kind of like last year when they didn't need it and this and that. Well, this Denver Broncos team has a lot of similarities in that they've won, 11 one-score games this year, and I'm not saying they didn't earn those games, but you win that many one-score games, you're catching a little bit of luck, and there's the ball's got to bounce your way at times, and they've been fortunate to win those this year, and they grabbed the one seed, so they do have a massive advantage in this one. And so we'll, you know, I'm pretty confident that Sean McDermott and this defense, they're going to be able to give a young quarterback some confusion on the back end. They got to be able to stop the run better than they did against Jacksonville, but this rushing attack, you know, that Jaguars rushing attack wasn't that great either, and they ran the ball for about 7 yards a carry, but I have confidence in that side of the ball. And then, you know, the Bills are going to have to make some plays offensively, and guys, you know, you're probably going to throw away from Patrick Surtain. So can you pick on McMillan, the nickel, which we did last year in the playoff game? Can you pick on Riley Moss, who seems like he's a PI or a holding call, you know, once a series? And you're going to have to try and take advantage of some of those guys, because you can't play from behind the sticks against this pass rush. They got 68 sacks on the season. Next closest, I believe, is 59 with Atlanta. So they're head and shoulders above the field sack-wise. So you don't want to get behind the sticks. So you try to establish the run, but they got the number two run defense in the league. So you try and stay disciplined and then go out and make some plays. And you're probably going to need another effort like Josh Allen played last week against the Broncos to get it done.
You mentioned Riley Moss, by the way. I was just looking at his name earlier. You probably can't lead the league in passes defended without, you know, taking some chances with the flags, you know, taking some liberties. So
well, he gets thrown at a ton because Surtain's on the other side of the field.
Right.
Makes sense.
Obviously, these are not division rivals, Eric, but they did meet in the playoffs last year. How much familiarity is there? Like, how much carryover do you think? I mean, it's another new season. There's some different personnel, but it's the same coach, same quarterback, a lot of similar pieces on defense. And we heard a lot about how tough Denver was going to be on defense, and the Bills chewed them up.
Yeah, they put up over 30 last year in that game. And yeah, so you take some confidence from the fact that you've done it before in a playoff game, and obviously different situation when you're not at home and all that. But yeah, you can get some confidence from that. You know, guys are going to have individual matchups with guys that they had last year, so you kind of see what kind of moves they gave you or what they try to use tactically to try to beat you, whatever position that may be. There's a lot you could take from that, and then, you know, there is carryover, but then each year, each team is different. This, you know, this Bills defense looks a ton different than it did a year ago schematically. The Bills offense does some different things, fairly similar, but does some different things as well. And so, you know, they're going to be the same way. And so you put a lot of prep into these, and, you know, this is I remember a Bill O'Brien quote from 2019, and he talked about meeting with his staff before playing the Bills in the wild card round. And he said, look, I'm just telling you, this is going to be the most prepared team we've played. The Bills are going to leave no stone unturned. And he goes, I know it because I sat next to Sean McDermott at the owners' meetings, which is a party for half of us, and Sean McDermott has got his planner out, and he's got every half hour block of his day scheduled out to even spend time with family is even blocked off. He's like, when I saw that, I realized that is a detailed dude. And I say all that just to say that even on a short week, I got a lot of confidence that this Bills team will be prepared.
That's one thing I got to do to spend more time with my family is write it in a book so that I remember to do it. I've got to do more of that.
If it's not scheduled, you'll put some in front of it.
I guess I deserve that. I brought it up, you know, on my own. A couple of minutes left with Eric Wood. So great weekend in the league, Eric. I mean, almost every game, starting with Carolina and the Rams on Saturday, ended up just being a thriller. Back and forth games. Philadelphia being out, that'll be an interesting offseason team, right? Philly with, you know, all the drama that there is there. Chargers last night. Looks like the film watchers today are really bummed out that Justin Herbert didn't go for it in this game. Like, just a lot of tucking and running and throwing it short. So they might have missed a chance there. And Lawrence, what did you think of Lawrence in our game? I feel like I'm harsh for saying it, but 4th and 2 at the 9 in the second quarter. I mean, he's a big guy. I just want a little bit more Allen from him, I guess, in a certain way.
Yeah, go run over somebody and go try and get in the end zone. And honestly, I felt like one of the best things about his game, we might have talked about this last week on the show, was that in the red zone, he's running to score now. You know, you're 6'6", 240 pounds. Go score. you know, the season's on the line. You can't get stopped and in short when you dive like that. It's not third down. Like, Josh Allen came up just shy of the sticks, but he slid, but that was third down.
Right.
Big difference. And you'd love to say Josh dive forward, and I said it on the broadcast, like, that's a situation where you dive forward, but you're pretty confident on fourth and inches. On fourth down, go get the first down. And, you know, I've covered Trevor Lawrence since he was in college when I was with ESPN, and always very impressed with him as a person and his skill set and everything else. But to me, he's a little slow, a little methodical. He's got a long release, which is probably part of the reason we had 11 pass breakups yesterday. But he's uber talented, and Liam Cohen got him playing at the best level of his entire career. And then, man, running through those games, it was a fun weekend of football. Last night's game, you know, I'm obviously rooting for the Chargers because I'd love to see one more game at Highmark. And the fact that the Chargers had no answer for just continuous blitzes, and then when they weren't blitzing, it was obvious, but it didn't seem like they had anything good planned then. And, to, you know, this is a banged-up Chargers offensive line, but I thought schematically they looked terrible as well to not have any answers. That Green Bay-Chicago rivalry is fun. It's almost like watching WWE leading up to it with all the hatred. And whether it's real or not, it's fun. You know, this is like the NFL doesn't, you know, we only play 17 regular season games, you go to the playoffs. Like, everybody doesn't need to be nice. It's not like the NBA where you're going to see these guys over and over and everybody's buddies and whatnot. Like, this is a physical game, and I like some of that.
Yeah, it seems pretty real to Ben Johnson. I would say that, unless he's just play acting.
I want to know, like, what happens at the coaches meetings? Like, do they just avoid each other? Are they cordial there? Do they laugh it off? Like, when stuff like that happens, like the awkward exchange between Daboll and McDermott after the Giants-Bills game, like, do they just shake that off, or do they avoid each other? I don't know. I'd like to hear that.
Yeah. Real quick before you go, Eric, just a minute or two. I know you were only with Tre'Davious White as a player for that 1 year, his rookie year, his first year here, but obviously a tremendous performance by him yesterday, and there had to be a lot of emotion, I think, for anyone who's known, even from a distance, knowing what he's gone through. It can be emotional to think about and talk about, but man, what a game he had.
He did, and to battle back from what he did and to bounce around, and then, you know, this year, you know, a lot of scrutiny early in the season through training camp, the preseason, and then this second half of the season, he's been outstanding, and then yesterday was incredible. He has the pass breakup in the red zone earlier in the game, had another pass breakup, and then the one to seal it, you know, he's in press man coverage, which he was always kind of that physical zone corner. Well, he's playing press man. And my favorite part of the play is he purposely tips that ball up in the air instead of batting it down, and he flips his head around, assuming the safety's there, and he's celebrating even before Cole Bishop even fully secures it. Like, that is a veteran play. I mean, it just, like, that just screams experience, savvy. The game's slow. Like, if the game's moving too fast for you and you're a rookie corner in that situation, it's at the end of the game, you're thinking, just bat this ball down, do anything I can to get, you know, not give up the game winner here. Mm-hmm. And he bats it straight up in the air to make the game sealer. Like, to me, that just screams Tre'Davious White. You know, smart, hardworking, knows the situation. It's who he's been since he was when he first came to the Bills.
Glad this came up. Tre' White, great day. I saw your tweet about that play, too. Watch right. Bosa on that play. And what is the left tackle doing, Eric? If you see that, if you watch the line on that one, he just walks right through him, and he gets to Lawrence to put the pressure on there. We'll let you go here, and we look forward to talking next Monday.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, guys.
All right, Eric Wood on the Western Hotline. His weekly appearance is here on WGR, brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com, and by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop at northtownkia.com.
Join us next, if you would, 803-0550 for your comments. Sal at 5, the Sabres home to Florida, pregame at 6. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.